everybody. Welcome back to the Biographics Podcast. I'm Simon, and this episode today originally aired on our YouTube channel. If you like it, please do consider heading over to iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts and leaving us a rating and or a review. 5 stars or whatever is always preferred, but do be honest. Let us know how we're doing. Really do appreciate it. And let's get into today's episode. Balto the Siberian Husky is remembered for leading a team of sled dogs to deliver medicine that saved the town of Nome, Alaska from a deadly epidemic. He became a national hero, and his photo is on the front page of every newspaper in the country. A statue was erected in his honor in Central Park in 1925, and it is still one of the most beloved tourist attractions to this very day. Many of you might have seen the animated film by Universal Pictures, and that might be all you know about Balto. But the true story is far more dramatic than what you ever learned from cartoons and children's books. And in the video today, we're bringing you the story of Balto, the canine hero. Our story begins in the remote town of Nome, Alaska. In the 1890s, the Nome Gold Rush brought prospectors to this small town in the hopes of making it rich. There were no paved roads, so it was incredibly difficult for people to get around, especially in the winter. Many of the people who moved to Nome had to adjust to life in Alaska, and they became a very tight-knit community. These people, they had a lot of respect for one another because they were all managing to survive in the American wilderness. If anyone was struggling, neighbors helped one another out without hesitation, and it really fostered a close community. A Norwegian man named Leonhard Sepala owned a dog kennel in Nome. Sepala is credited for being the first man to introduce Russia's working dog breed from Siberia to the United States, and they later got the name Siberian Husky. These dogs became so popular in Alaska that he decided to breed them for a living. He was only interested in breeding dogs that were light and were fast. He became one of the first men to participate in competitive dog sled racing in the United States. One of the many puppies that was born in Sepala's kennel was named Balto. He was born with brown eyes and black fur with white socks on his two front legs. Balto was apparently too large, and he was considered a scrub dog. Sepala had him neutered right away because he was deemed to be far too inferior to pass on his DNA. Balto was born between the years 1919 and 1923, but no one can be quite sure of the exact date. Sepala essentially was breeding so many dogs that he didn't really keep track of every puppy that he declared a reject. For all of the other dogs that did not suit his needs, Sepala would rent them out to members of the community to use for pulling their dog sleds. In the winter, dog sleds became the only option for traveling out of town to trade gold for supplies. Since so many men traveled to Nome looking for jobs in the mining industry, Sepala was able to make a fortune renting out as well as selling his dogs. Sepala's favorite husky was called Togo. He was considered to be a perfect husky specimen who was incredibly light and muscular. As the story goes, Togo was so fast that he could race a train and win. So Sepala, he put all of his time and energy into training this favorite dog of his. A man named Gunnar Carson had moved from Norway to Nome, Alaska to take part in the gold rush. He paid to rent Sepala's dogs to transport supplies to men who were working in the gold mines. There is no record of why Carson chose Balto to be his lead dog, but most people believe it was because he felt some kind of connection from the start. Most mushers choose a dog to lead that they know they can trust. He saw something special in Balto, and the decision to take him home, it was one day going to save his life. Nome was having one of the coldest winters on record. Temperatures were reaching minus 50 degrees Fahrenheit, which is minus 45 degrees Celsius. Winds were 50 miles, or around 80 kilometers per hour. There were several terrible blizzards that made travel conditions impossible, and most people had no choice but to isolate themselves in their homes and just stay by the fireplace. In December of 1924, a record number of children were going to the only doctor in town, Curtis Welch. At first, Dr. Welch thought that these children simply had a sore throat, and their parents, they tried to nurse them back to health over the holidays. A few weeks later, in January of 1925, two children unfortunately died. It was at this point that Dr. Welch realized that this was actually a highly contagious disease called diphtheria, and it had infected most of the children in town. The native Inuit children were affected the worst because diphtheria was a white man's disease. This illness was nicknamed the strangling angel because the inside of the throat begins to turn to leather and people can no longer breathe or swallow. Children were far more susceptible to catching diphtheria than adults, so parents were watching helplessly as their sons and daughters were slowly choking to death. Dr. Welch announced that all of the children who were infected needed to be placed in quarantine in order to prevent an epidemic. The cure for diphtheria, it existed, but Nome was not equipped to treat such a massive outbreak. They needed a medicine called antitoxin serum. Since Dr. Welch and his four nurses were the only medical professionals in town, they were working around the clock to treat those children. The total population of Nome was just 10,000 people, and even after placing the infected under quarantine, it was already too late. More people, they were getting sick every single day. Everyone was afraid that if the outbreak was not contained, all of the children may die and it may spread to the adults as well. On January the 22nd, 1925, Dr. Welch sent out dozens of telegrams to doctors around Alaska and even sent a message to Washington, D.C., hoping for the help to get enough antitoxin. They were eager to help, but the issue was delivery. The winds were far too strong for a plane to travel through that weather, and there was too much ice for a ship to reach the harbor. The nearest city where medicine could be delivered was Anchorage. But the train stopped in a town called Nenana, which was 674 miles away from Nome. The only choice was to take sled dogs across the snowy Iditarod Trail, which was normally a 15 to 20 day journey. There were plenty of obstacles in the way that slowed down such a journey. Mountains, steep crevasses, and the frozen Yukon River. Alaska's territorial governor, Scott Bone, approved the plan for the best mushers to participate in a relay to guide their teams of sled dogs. The plan was for 20 men and 150 dogs to wait at checkpoints where they would pass off the antitoxin to the next team so they were able to transport the medicine as quickly and efficiently as possible. The first man to pick up the antitoxin at the train station in Nenana was named Wild Bill Shannon. He traveled for 24 hours straight in minus 60 degree weather to get to the first checkpoint. Another of the mushers, Bill McCarty, came prepared with little moccasins for his dog's feet so that they wouldn't have to walk on the ice with their bare paws. Leonard Sapala volunteered to take the most dangerous part of the journey since he had the most experience. But he was very concerned with going fast and ordering his dog to go as fast as he could, just like he would in a race. He saw a man called Henry Ivanov stopped on the trail because he was struggling with disobedient dogs. Sapala chose to ignore him and sped past instead of offering help. Ivanov had to run after Sapala, shouting, the serum, I have it here!" Thankfully, Sapala heard him and he was able to turn his sled around and pick up the medicine, but his need for speed, it very nearly blew the entire mission. Since Dr. Welch had sent telegrams all over the country a few days earlier, stories of the epidemic were being printed in newspapers in the lower 48 states. This story, it was gripping and it was tragic, and it could have been right out of a novel. Unbeknownst to the 20 men, people all over the United States began to hope and pray that they would make it. Just days before this happened, hardly anyone had even heard of Nome, Alaska. But once they knew so many young lives were at stake, everyone was rooting for them. Gunnar Carson had taken the Iditarod Trail together with Balto several times on their supply run, so he volunteered to be one of the 20 men that helped retrieve the medicine. Unlike Leonhard Sapala and the other men, Carson did not compete in dog racing. Balto was his pet when they weren't working together. Carson was very quiet and shy around other people, so Balto was his best friend and he knew he could rely on him. Carson was considered to be a novice compared to the rest of the crew. Therefore, he was given one of the easiest legs of the trail. Balto and Carson really did lead a team of underdogs in more ways than one. But no one could predict what was going to happen next. While Gunnar Carson was on his leg of the journey, a terrible storm began. Each one of the checkpoint stations received a message that the serum run was temporarily cancelled because it was too dangerous. But Carson was already in the wilderness with all of the antitoxin when the blizzard hit. He obviously had no way of getting the memo. Also, there was nowhere for him to take shelter until the storm blew over. The blizzard caused a whiteout. Carson could not even see his hand in front of his face, let alone have a sense of direction. He stopped moving for 2 hours, cuddling next to Balto and the rest of his sled dogs. He was hoping that the storm would pass and they could carry on. However, he could not stop thinking about the children in the hospital. With every passing minute, another child could die without the medicine, and if he waited much longer, it was likely that they would not survive the night. He decided that his only option was to move forward, despite not being able to see anything. Gunnar Carson had to put all of his faith in his dog, Balto. Dogs have a far better sense of direction than humans, and Balto had been through the trail many times before. The dog was leading the way, using his senses to guide the rest of the team to where they needed to go. At one point, they were hit by a wind tunnel that was so strong that it knocked over the sled. The medicine went flying into a large snowbank. Carson could not find it for a very long time. He got down on his hands and knees and he started digging through the snow before he finally found the antitoxin. Balto and the team, they finally reached a town called Port Safety, which was the next checkpoint in the relay. However, he arrived in the middle of the night, and since the next musher had been told the relay was cancelled, he and the dogs had fallen asleep. With just 12 miles left to go, Carson decided to push through the last leg of the journey himself. When they arrived back in Nome, it was 5:30 in the morning, and he went straight to Dr. Welch. Once the vaccine thawed, he was able to administer it to the infected children, and they all made a full recovery. Soon after arriving back in Nome, journalists from all over the United States began to contact Gunnar Carson and asked for an interview so that they could hear the story of his near-death experience bringing the antitoxin to the sick children. He was always humble and downplayed his involvement in securing the medicine. He said, "To the other drivers and dogs, the most credit is due. They had the harder mush, more difficulties. For them, I know I can say, as for myself, we were glad to serve." Americans all over the country, they wanted to meet Balto, and children loved listening to the story of this real-life dog hero. Balto was invited to the Biltmore Hotel in Los Angeles. Gunnar Carson agreed to the interview, and he was shocked to see movie stars showing up to have their picture taken with the dog. Normally, a national hero is welcome to Los Angeles with keys to the city, but Balto was given the bones to the city instead. Paramount Pictures hired Balto and Gunnar Carson to star in a dramatized documentary called Balto's Race to Nome. It became a blockbuster hit in 1925. They made copies of the film, but there was a studio fire in the 1930s that destroyed them all, so sadly, this movie no longer exists. They traveled by train across the whole country, and in December of 1925, they arrived in New York City. Balto was put on stage on Broadway for a week in a vaudeville show. He also posed for a sculptor who created the brass statue that stands in Central Park. There was a ceremony that unveiled the Balto statue, which included a plaque that said, "Dedicated to the indomitable spirit of the sled dogs that relayed antitoxin 600 miles over rough ice, across treacherous waters, through Arctic blizzards. From Nanana to the relief of the stricken gnome in the winter of 1925, endurance, fidelity, intelligence." Even though the statue was meant to commemorate all of the 150 dogs, it was clear that Balto was the only one in the limelight. Leonard Sapala was still Balto's true owner, but Gunnar Carson was getting all of the credit. Sapala, he was jealous of this, because he had dedicated the majority of his life to breeding and racing dogs. He also took the most risk during the journey by volunteering for the most dangerous portion of the trail. By this logic, he thought that he would have gotten all of the glory, and it was truly a low blow for the least skilled musher and dogs to get all of the attention. Not only that, but he also was angry that Balto, who he considered a subpar dog, was now representing the Siberian Husky breed. He believed that he and Togo deserved to be on the front page, not those amateurs. When he returned to Nome, Alaska, after a year-long American tour, Gunnar Carson found that Sapala wasn't the only one who was upset. The community was split between those who believed Togo deserved the recognition and those who supported Balto. Some even accused Carson of skipping the last stop on purpose because he would have known that the sled to arrive in town with the medicine would have gotten all the glory. But many historians do not believe that Carson could possibly be motivated by fame. He would have had no way of knowing that the whole country was waiting to hear news about the small town in the middle of Alaska. He was simply too busy and just trying to stay alive. For Sapala, the statue of Balto in Central Park, it was the last straw. He wanted to get rid of Balto and decided that he needed to go on his own tour with Togo in an attempt to brand him as the true dog hero. He and his manager, they planned a huge spectacle of traveling to New York City to ride his team of dogs down Broadway and end up at Madison Square Garden. But even on these tours, children, they were still asking about Balto. No matter how hard he tried, people still loved the adorable black husky with white socks that led his musher through a blizzard. Since Leonard Sapala was still Balto's legal owner, he decided to get rid of him for good by putting Balto and the rest of the dog team up for auction. Gunnar Carson was mortified, and he could not afford to bid on Balto to save him from his fate. When Balto was sold, Carson lost his best friend, and he was never the same again. Balto and the rest of the dog sled team, they were sold to a man named Sam Houston, who put them on display at his dime museum in Los Angeles. These were typically filled with oddities and freak shows. People paid a dime for a ticket to go around and stare at the live attractions. The dogs were chained to the wall all day, every day. They were not allowed to run or to play, and Houston hardly fed them, and they became sick with mange. In 1927, a man named George Kimball from Cleveland, Ohio, was visiting Los Angeles, and he bought a ticket to the Sam Houston Dime Museum. This is where he found Balto. Kimball had read all of the stories in the newspaper, so he was horrified to see these heroic dogs being mistreated. He asked Sam Houston what it would take to buy Balto, and he was told that it would take $2,000. After modern-day inflation, that's more like $28,000. George Kimball could not afford that himself, so when he returned to Cleveland, he began a campaign to save Balto. The story of the dog's heroic mistreatment ran in the local newspaper. Citizens of Cleveland donated whatever they could afford. Even young children brought their pennies to Kimball's campaign, hoping to save their hero. 10 days later, they had raised enough money to buy Balto, and they had a little extra left over to save his friends as well. When the dogs arrived in Cleveland, they were finally allowed to pull a sled again as a team. A crowd of 15,000 people lined the street, cheering and giving the dogs a standing ovation. And the city, it didn't stop there. Citizens of Cleveland, they put together the money to build the dogs a large enclosure at the zoo with a grassy field for them to run and play. The entire city considered them to be their pets. They were given more love and attention than most dogs ever get. Balto remained at the Cleveland Zoo for the next 6 years. When he was between 11 and 14 years old, he became very sick and he could barely walk. When children heard that he was missing from the grass enclosure, they would call the zoo every day asking for updates to see if Balto was feeling better. But the veterinarians, they knew that it was more humane to put him to sleep. When Balto died, the entire country mourned his death. He was once again on the front page of every paper. People loved him so much, they didn't want to let him go, so Balto's body was turned into a taxidermy figure. His remains were moved to the Cleveland Museum of Natural History. Ever since then, children go on school trips to see Balto and hear the story of the race to save Nome. For all his efforts to erase Balto from history, Sapala failed to insert himself and Togo into the limelight to the extent that Balto had been there. Togo fathered dozens of puppies, and when he grew older, he had a very comfortable doggy retirement, living with a family friend in Poland Spring, Maine. When he died, his body was also stuffed and mounted at the Peabody Museum of Natural History at Yale University. However, it was never preserved properly, and children were touching and petting Togo so much that the taxidermied figure became damaged. He eventually had to be removed from the museum. Even after the dogs had passed away, there were still plenty of people in the sledding community who believed that Togo truly deserved the fame over Balto. But what we do know for sure is that if it were not for Gunnar Carson's complete trust in his brave dog, the entire team would have frozen to death in their blizzard. The vaccine for Nome would have been buried under piles of snow, and there is no telling how many people would have died as a result. But what we do know is that Balto, the dog, was a hero, and certainly a very good boy. Back in Alaska, Gunnar Carson lived a quiet life. Years later, his niece, Janice Whalen, asked her uncle to tell her the story of what really happened with Balto, since she had heard so many different versions of the story from children at school. He replied, "I will tell you this once and only once. If it wasn't for Balto, I wouldn't be alive today."
So I really hope you enjoyed that episode of the Biographics Podcast. Please do consider heading over to wherever you get your podcasts and leaving us a review. It does make a big difference. It gets this podcast in front of more people. So if you do that, I would greatly appreciate it. And I'll see you next time.